Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. 14 months into a state of emergency, and we've all seen changes to shopping, to business districts, to restaurants, to travel. The landscape surrounding one area, though, has been fundamentally upended, and while it gets little attention, it clearly affects so many of us. Of course, I'm talking about the area of landlord-tenant law, and tonight I'm joined by three of the best. As always, we're eager to hear what's on your mind and to answer your questions. Give us a call at 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134 if you're in the Bay Area. If you're outside of the local dialing area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. Again, that's 866-798-8255. As always, our attorney guest can't give you specific legal advice as we don't have all of the salient facts of your situation. We're happy to share on the legal principles that will help guide you in your decision-making. And you can call us with any landlord-tenant question, whether you're a tenant or a landlord or just an interested soul. You're not limited to the point we may be in our conversation. Again, the number here, 866-798-8255. With me tonight, for some 20 years, San Francisco landlord-tenant attorney Jessica Chilek represents clients in rent board actions, mediations, and court for landlord-tenant issues. Jessica launched her practice to specialize in San Francisco residential evictions, vacancy agreements, and rent board petitions for tenants, landlords, master tenants, and subtenants. Also joining us tonight is San Francisco attorney Salvatore Timpano. Sal is considered one of the top attorneys in the Bay Area to practice in the area of landlord-tenant law, representing both landlords and tenants in the area of eviction. And San Mateo attorney David Finkelstein, a graduate of NYU School of Law, David is admitted to practice in the states of California and New York, beginning his career as a staff attorney in California for the National Housing Law Project at Bolt Hall Law School. And for the last 40 years or more, David has been representing clients in real estate and landlord-tenant matters. And with that, David, Sal, Jessica, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for having us in.
You know, before we go further, I'd like to begin with a very simple question. How long does a statewide stay on evictions last? I understand San Francisco may have another one in the works.
My understanding is it expires on July 1. There's always some possibility that it could get further extended.
I agree with you, David. For July 1 is certainly a date that we know about, and there's still, I don't know, a month to go, a little bit more than a month, and it could be extended. What do you think about that, Jessica?
Well, what I've been reading in California legislative update that I've been looking at pretty regularly, there's not a lot of interest right now in the legislature to continue that. But that doesn't exclude the possibility. I mean, the tenant advocacy groups are really working to get the attention of the legislature members.
Yeah, I mean, in the past, some of these, moratoriums were extended on the very last day of the prior moratorium. You know, that occurred during this pandemic, and others were just a few days before. So there's really no telling until July 1st rolls around.
We have a couple of callers in queue. Let me turn it to Donald from South City on line one. Donald, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
This is Donald in Millbrae.
Well, Donald, you're on the air with us. Thank you. And I'm glad you can navigate
Jeff.
I couldn't. But welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you, Jeff. I got a question. So I'm renting an apartment on a one-year lease. It ends in October. The downstairs neighbor is a foster mom who has several teenage kids, and they're driving me crazy. The foster mom works nights. The teenage kids are loud. They play music. They got friends coming over. They're smoking marijuana. I went downstairs and asked them to keep it down, and they started giving me attitude. Now they're banging on my ceiling. They bang on my ceiling almost every night when the mom works. It keeps me up. It's scaring me. I talked to the landlord. I called the security we got here in the complex. Finally, a week ago, or maybe 2 weeks ago, I called the police. The police came. They told me that I should probably get a restraining order. I asked an attorney to send a demand letter to the downstairs neighbor and send a copy to the landlord. The attorney did that, and everything's gotten worse in the last week. Every single night, they're banging on my ceiling. Someone spit on my door. I can't sleep. When I walk around the complex, these kids stare at me. They give me menacing glances. I'm walking on eggshells here. My question for your guests is, at what point is this a constructive eviction? At what point am I entitled to rent abatement because I'm not getting the quiet enjoyment of my premises? Thank you.
Thank you, Donald. I think we're with you, and if you'd like, you can take your answer on the air. Donald, it looks like, has done a little bit of reading, maybe in the NOLO press. He's hit some of the key words. But my question for our guests who practice in this area of law, what do you think? Do you think that the landlord is under a duty to do something? Where does he go?
I'll take a start because I'm in San Mateo County, and not that I necessarily have a better answer, but I would say that, you know, the key thing here is that this tenant has complained to the police, has put it on record. It's not something that he's making up to stop paying the rent. But I think he can send the landlord a letter just expressing in detail what he has expressed to us and saying this is a breach of his quiet enjoyment. He can't sleep at night. His sleep is disturbed. He's going to be looking for alternate housing. And in the interim, he is not going to be paying the June rent or thereafter until and unless the landlord acts to safeguard his quiet enjoyment. That's what I would recommend. So he could also give a 30-day notice to leave at any time.
I would add that if you're going to, you know, potentially pursue any kind of claim for compensation, that you really need to get your evidence in order. Take photos of the spit on the wall. Keep a notebook where you write down the day and the time and what's going on so that there's a concurrent record of what's going on, of all the problems. You know, if you don't have a cell phone that takes photographs, Walgreens still sells disposable cameras and develops film. So, you know, you could do that.
Were you finished, Jessica?
No, go ahead.
Okay, I was just going to add that the options are not necessarily great. If you withhold rent, you may get a lawsuit or a notice for unpaid rent. Then you got to decide what you want to do there. Your defenses will be, you know, the unit isn't worth what you're asking for because I'm not getting quiet enjoyment. Then what Jessica said comes into play. You need good evidence. The other thing you could do is, as David suggested, sue for quiet enjoyment. That's not going to be inexpensive either, you know. So your options are, you know, they're not easy options. I think David had said it, you know, write a letter to the landlord. You should do that again. I think you did communicate with the landlord. I don't know if you did it in writing, but you can make an omnibus letter that says everything in it. You know, essentially your complaint, but instead of on a complaint form, it's on a letter form. and you put in everything that's happened and how it's affected you and what you want. I think your best bet is to do that. At some point, you'll have a good case. I mean, you're going to go through a few weeks or months of continued aggravation, but you'll have a good case. And then you'll have to, you know, choose a way to proceed and you know, fund it.
There's another approach you could take outside of landlord-tenant law, and that was to follow the officer's advice and get a restraining order, even if it's a peaceful contact order. What that would do is if the parent leaves the house, the kids are acting up and banging on the ceiling and doing these other things, it gives you some action when you call the police because they're in violation of a restraining order. Now there's some teeth to it that the police can act on. So if you're not getting relief from your landlord, that's another one. But no matter which one of these routes you take, my guests have given you great advice. But whether you go any one of these routes, understand that you could be starting a battle. So choose your battles. If you go the route of the restraining order, you're definitely going to start a battle not so much with the landlord as much as with the people downstairs. And if you go whatever route you took, you are starting something, so you really need to be able to follow through. And sending out those letters, as you were advised, generates evidence that you can use. Thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. And let me turn it over to Michael in Oakland. Michael, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hey, thanks, guys. Yeah, I have a pretty simple question here. My landlord is selling our building. They just posted notices on everyone's door yesterday. And I've had bad experiences with this in the past. And I'm just wondering, do your rights as a tenant get altered when a new owner owns the building, whether you're on a lease or not?
And the answer to that is no, it doesn't. The subsequent landlord or owner, even if it's a company, has to follow the same rules as the current owner does. Whoever, you know, those leases pass on or oral rental agreements pass on to the subsequent landlord, who still has to follow the same rules.
I agree.
Yeah, me too.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Let me turn it over to James from Berkeley. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello. I'm a landlord, and it seems to me that I understand the emergency of the COVID pandemic. However, it seems to me that the landlords are being made to pay for it rather than the state paying for it. In other words, the state passed the law, and then the landlords, at best, have this 80-20% where they might have to pay the 20% rather than the state. And in my particular case, my tenant is frauding me. She doesn't qualify for the pandemic, and she claims that she does. And so I wondered if anybody had a comment about the role of the state.
James, you're just a little ahead of us in terms of the sequence I was going to go through stuff, so I'll jump ahead to answer your question while you're on the line. We had been speaking of this before going on the air, and I would ask my guests if anybody wants to be the one to tell James what the governor is planning in this regard, because there may be some relief down the pipeline. I'm not going to say there, but
I know there's 100% possibility with Newsom, but that's for landlords with tenants who qualify for the 80%, 20% program. And in my case, my tenant doesn't. I'm going to have to go to court and spend a lot of money on legal fees. In any case, thank you.
So where else can James go? Any recommendations?
Well, Jeff, even before we get there, something that we had talked about before going on the air with David and Jessica was that there was a requirement that a notice was sent out in February advising tenants about the program and giving them information about it. And I think we all agree that most landlords didn't know about that requirement and didn't send that notice. And the notice, I think we all agree that it says if you don't send it, you don't qualify for the program as a landlord or a tenant in that regard. But it's the landlord that needs to send it, because without sending it, they don't qualify for the program, and the tenant's not obligated to pay rent for certain periods of time that rent was unpaid during the pandemic. So I think the first question would be to determine if that notice was sent by the landlords, and if it wasn't, they're going to have to figure out, you know, what they can do.
Well, in my practice, we've been sending, this is, you no longer can do a 3-day notice. You have to do the 15-day notice. You have to attach a declaration for the tenant to sign, stating they have a COVID-related financial distress, and you have to attach what that financial distress, the grounds for it are. And we attach the notice of the statute that was supposed to have been sent before. We attach it to this notice. And our experience has been that about 50% or maybe even a larger number of tenants do not respond within the 15 days or don't respond at all to this notice. And we have been successful in getting unlawful retainers issued. Well, usually there's no opposition. So I don't know what would happen if a tenant got a legal aid attorney to state that my landlord client did not send the notice back in February. But we attach the notice to the 15-day declaration. My argument would be, what's the damage? We're giving him the notice of all of his rights and where to contact and what to do and all of that. So, and we've been successful so far, but then again, I haven't had a case by legal aid opposing it yet.
Yeah, and I agree with you, David. I don't see the harm either. I really just don't see the harm. You know, I don't see the harm. I just don't see it either. And I also agree that, in San Francisco, they'll probably respond to the notice because they get other notices in San Francisco that give them phone numbers to call and resources. And they're most likely going to call, and the resources are free. The representation is free. So they're going to get free, you know, legal aid, and it's going to, you know, get them. It's going to get the notice before the court. And then I guess we would get a judge's response as to what, you know, what happens with that notice. That you and I agree, if they didn't get it, where's the harm? But we'll, you know, we'd actually have a judge weighing in on that. So I haven't had that yet. I haven't had that experience yet, in part because we have a moratorium where we can't serve these notices for non-payment of rent in San Francisco until the end of June. And then, as we discussed earlier, before the program started, that's been extended. In the past, there's been an extension to that by the mayor's office. So it looks like October 1st before we can file unlawful detainers for non-payment of rent, COVID-related.
And then, James, in Berkeley, you know, there's also the fact that you can work out a payment plan with your client, or you could potentially sue in small claims court, because small claims court for COVID-related rent has also... The maximum has been lifted, and you know, so there are options there if you need to go that route. You know, maybe there's a community based organization that can help you mediate, that can provide a mediator or someone to help you work out a payment plan or a way to move forward.
So, thank you. I just want you to know that my tenant makes $300,000 a year, and she was claiming that she was financially strapped by COVID. And then when she made the applications for tenant relief, she realized that she wasn't going to qualify. So my actual question was, what is the justification for the state for putting some of its citizens in the position of paying for the emergency relief? But I'll, if you have an answer for that, I'll take it off the air. Thank you very much. I think I did send all the notices on time and so on. But I think your information about telling us about the notices is very good information for people to hear from you. In any case, thank you very much for your service.
I'd just like to add that if the tenant makes $300,000 a year, they're in a different category, and they have to submit evidence further evidence rather than just a declaration. And if they don't qualify, I don't know about, I assume in San Francisco, they still can't go ahead, but, and I would assume statewide, you'd still have to wait until July 1, but I think you could go ahead with an eviction at that time.
Well, thank you very much.
And James, in answer to your question, the only thing I've heard publicly is the official line is that the stay was all designed to keep people in their homes at a time when we were all expected to be sheltering in place, rather than having them in a transient position where they're going to spread the virus. So I suspect that somebody like your tenant who has a fairly large income and can go anywhere is probably going to seem a lot less sympathetic as we're less and less expected to shelter in place. So that may shift the burden back. But it's an unfortunate situation. You have our sympathies.
Well, thank you, sir. Again, I appreciate your service coming on this program and explaining things to the public.
Thank you for joining us. You're welcome back anytime, and we appreciate your listening.
All right, thank you.
You know, one thing that just came out in James's question is we've been talking in terms of a moratorium for non-payment of rent. And that begs a couple of questions. One of them is, does the moratorium now reach other reasons for eviction, or is it strictly non-payment? Does it reach people who are high income and are not affected by the pandemic? What are the limits, if there are any, on the moratorium in the present state?
I think the statewide moratorium is limited to the non-payment of rent. That would have to do, and then, you know, the thing is you have to give a 15-day notice that has, as David said earlier, a blank declaration of COVID-related financial hardship for the tenant to sign. And if they sign that, that's a declaration under penalty of perjury that says that they have COVID-related, you know, decrease in income and they can't afford their rent. Now, if somebody's got a very high income, you know, six figures or more, there's a part of my brain that's going, you know, how can you not pay at least some portion of your rent and work it out with your landlord? But, you know, that might just be me.
Let me take a call from Zoe in Richmond. Zoe, welcome to Your Legal Rights. Zoe from Richmond, are you on the phone with us? We'll circle back. We can't hear Zoe. Let's see if Tricia from San Francisco is on the line. Tricia, Zoe? Well, we seem to have lost both guests. If you wish to call back, we're more than happy to hear from you. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM. I'm Jeff Hayden. Tonight, we're taking a look at landlord-tenant issues with three of the best, Jessica Chilek and Sal Timpano of San Francisco, and San Mateo's David Finkelstein. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number is 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the local dialing area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. Again, that's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. You're not limited to the point we may be in our conversation. And Tricia, we'll try again. Welcome back to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you. I have been a renter my entire life, and I have an older friend who has put me in his will for a small home in San Francisco. And however, he's got it paid off, but he did a reverse mortgage to live out the rest of his retirement. And I have never owned a house, so I don't know if he were to pass away, would I, and the house value, happened to be a little low, there's no way I'm going to be able to afford the mortgage on this house, so I'd have to sell it. But I'm wondering, would I be obligated to pay the bank if if the value of the house drops? Would it come out of my pocket because I've been willed this house?
Well, I'm not an expert on reverse mortgages, but I believe the answer is no, the bank is limited to the value of the property. And in fact, if the property is sold and there's excess value, that would go to you.
Correct. I just wondered who should I talk to that just, I don't know why, to quell my fear of, you know, owing to the bank, to be just really clear about that. If there were, God forbid, an earthquake or something.
Well, one of your questions when you started out didn't sit real well with me, and that is when you were asking if you received the property, it's willed to you, and then it's underwater, can you be stuck with a deficiency? And I think that if your landlord passes and you understand it's been willed to you before you accept anything, it wouldn't be a bad idea to get an appraisal and look at current market value, because you don't have to accept the gift that was left to you.
Right. She can always disclaim it. She could always file a disclaimer disclaiming the gift.
Okay.
If you want to talk to a real estate transactional attorney or a probate attorney, you can call the San Francisco Bar Association's lawyer referral service. I can give you their number.
Okay, let me get pen.
Actually, we're going to be giving that out during the station ID in about 3 minutes. You'll hear it over the air in about minutes.
That's fine.
They're very helpful in San Francisco, the lawyer referral and information service. And it's a very nominal charge to get a consultation for usually a half an hour for next to nothing. It's a great service.
Yeah, it's a half an hour. It's under most circumstances, it's 35, but I think during the pandemic, they've been waiving it because everybody's working from home.
Great. Well, thank you for your help. I appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights. You know, there's still some questions related to back rent, the pandemic, the moratorium on evictions. And when we return from the break in just a few minutes, I wanted to circle back to some of those. We talked about people that are protected from evictions right now. But what happens after the moratorium is lifted? Are they still liable? Would they have to pay the rent back when they're in a position to do it? Or somehow are they going to be forgiven? And what does this do for landlords, especially somebody like James from Berkeley, who was complaining, and it does fall on landlords, but his tenant in particular fell outside of the type of pandemic-related losses that the current programs are there to protect. What is a landlord going to do? You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. We'll be back right after this.
Thomas Rhett's new album is all about family. His daughters, his wife, he even co-wrote a lot of the songs with his dad, another country great, Rhett Akins. Thomas Rhett will tell you about his new album and how writing love songs with your dad is kinda awkward. It's coming up on Q from PRX.
Q from the CBC tonight at 7 o'clock, followed by All Songs Considered coming in at 8. Coming in at 8 right here on KALW San Francisco at 91.7 FM and online at kalw.org. Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. And if you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the law related to your situation. For the details, you can dial 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org.
So, one of the things we were talking about was the moratorium and how people can't be evicted for non-payment of rent until that moratorium is over. And, of course, if you're in San Francisco, that date may be different than some of the surrounding areas. What about nuisance tenants? Are they protected?
Hi, Jeff. No, they are not. They're not part of the moratorium. I mean, they have the protections that they would normally have in San Francisco under the rent ordinance or statewide under the Tenant Protection Act of 2019. But there's no moratorium on those evictions. In part, it's because the presumption is if you're causing a nuisance, it has nothing to do with the pandemic. It has nothing to do with loss of income tied to the pandemic protocol. So those are still going forward, but not, you know, not non-payment of rent. And it's kind of a gray area, at least for me, as to whether it's all non-payment of rent. I'm treating it as all non-payment of rent. I'm not really differentiating between COVID-related unpaid rent as far as filing an eviction in San Francisco. We're just not filing evictions, my office, for non-payment of rent until the moratorium is lifted.
Right. Me too.
I think there's, first of all, I agree about the nuisance. We filed a number of nuisance cases, and so far I believe we've been successful on all of the ones we filed. But also on this COVID-related rent, the actual statute, the SB 91, says that by on or before July 1 of this year, that the tenant must pay 25% of all past due COVID-related rent that's defined as rent from April 1, 2020 through June 30th of 2021. And this is going to be a major problem for most tenants. If they owe, how are they going to pay 25% of that by July 1? And I expect that, except in San Francisco, there's going to be a whole lot of notices going out on July 2 or 3 or July 5 for all that past due rent that is now due.
But those are also 15-day notices, and there's something in there that says that if the tenant can arrange rental assistance via the usual routes, whether it's the 80-20 thing that Newsom's got or the availability of rent assistance from, you know, Catholic Charities or, you know, in San Francisco, Radco provides this rental assistance, and they've done so beforehand. The landlord has to work with tenants and accept the rent from third parties. That's state law that went into effect in 2019.
Yes.
Let me turn it over to Pat from San Francisco. Pat, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can, and you're on the air. Welcome.
Okay. I may be bringing up a moot point, so you can just tell me. Here's my neighbor in my SF Housing Authority senior housing building recently was gone to the hospital, and when I met his partner in the hall, I was informed he died. I listened. I learned because she was not on their lease, and they are not considered a couple and tenants. She not a tenant. And appealing to the property manager to stay, she met a no. And it was her added distress that makes me want to just call in and ask. This may be a moot point, or maybe having resided there for a few years, she did have some legal rights to avoid being homeless, I think.
I'm sorry, you said it was a San Francisco Housing Authority building? Housing Authority and other subsidized buildings have a specific set of rules, and they enter into contracts with specific people. And if she wasn't on that contract or known to the management that she was you know, living there either as, you know, a partner, as a caretaker or something, then, you know, she may have some problems. You know, she might want to contact one of the nonprofits that helps folks with subsidized housing for assistance with that.
Well, thank you, because my knowledge, too, of how our city has so many resources, you know, made me realize that she will be okay. She will. But that's that. Then I wondered, I don't know, do you have callers stacked up?
At the moment, we don't have a huge stack up of callers. We have one or two waiting, but you're fine. You don't have to. You didn't have to rush.
I've also, on the floor I live on, noticed that there will now be two, possibly three, vacant units. And one of my units is for handicap. It was redesigned by John Stewart for handicap residents, enlarged door, a kitchen with mobility. And so it stood empty for 2 years. And I don't know how to frame it to my manager, but I just feel there's something amiss. The tenant is not coming back. They won't. That's private matter, but I'm assuming that they will not be back.
Well, I mean, they can be out of the unit for a purpose, like, you know, if somebody has to be in care. But the other person who lives in the unit is on the lease, may be coming back. You know, then the John Stewart has to hold it for them as long as they're paying rent. But if the case is that they have permanently moved out, you know, all of their stuff is gone and everything like that, then I mean, it's maybe they're waiting for another person who requires the wider doors.
Exactly. All right. Folks, I appreciate your program and your giving me a chance to speak.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you for joining us tonight. We do have one or two calls, but I did want to follow through. I did get a request from one of our listeners and wanted to know the state of the, or the status of the state's COVID relief back rent reimbursement program. This person, we've talked a little bit about that already tonight. But this person is not in San Francisco. They're in one of our neighboring counties. The local applications are actually managed and processed by United Way agency locally. They're having a bit of problems with backlog. And he was asking if this is typical of what's happening statewide. Are they having problems processing all these applications and getting through it?
I can tell you from my own personal experience, the answer is yes, they are. The local agency may be processing it, but ultimately the funds tend to come from the state. And my understanding from landlords is that, you know, when you apply, caseworkers get assigned, and that's not happening at the rate that people would hope.
And I see, Sal, David, you're both nodding, so I presume you are having similar experiences where these are just not being processed as we would hope.
Well, my experience, I have several landlords who have applied in San Mateo, and my experience is that the applications are easy to submit and that there is help available via telephone, and that it's very receptive. In fact, I've been part of one or two of them going back and forth. But I don't know about the actual payment of the monies. I'm not aware of how long it takes for the actual monies to get to the landlord. I don't know if Sal maybe has more experience.
No, what we've done is we provide the forms to the landlord or the information, but then we don't submit the papers. We don't accept the payment. It all goes through them. And you know, they do tell me that it's taking a long time to get the money. But, you know, my response is, well, what do you expect? You know, that everybody is applying that can. And so it's going to take time. It doesn't surprise me. And I also know that, you know, they need the money. They want the money. So even if it's a day late, it seems like a month. So not that they're over exaggerating it, but to me, it seems like, what can we expect under these circumstances? You know, it's all new. The whole program is new. The people working the program, it's new to them. So, but we're not involved in, it sounds like you're not either, David. We're not involved in getting that money. It doesn't come to my office. I've
sent out some applications just like you. I've talked to the landlords and encouraged them to follow up with phone calls, and they've gotten back to me and said the phone calls were answered and whatever, but I don't know about how long it took them to get the money or even if they've gotten the money yet. So I didn't follow up with that.
Yeah, my experience as well.
Let me turn it over to Robert from San Francisco. Robert, you're on Your Legal Rights.
Thank you. I live in a building with an outdoor heated pool. That's a very nice shared amenity. It's open from May 1st to October 31st. And it's been closed, and I went into the manager in the lobby about a month ago, and she said right now they're planning on opening the pool between June 15th and July 1st. There's a lot of red tape they have to deal with, and they have to get a health inspector out here from the health department in San Francisco. It seems like an uphill battle. Do you have any feedback on what the protocol is for outdoor pools, a shared amenity within a building of about 50 apartments?
Well, I mean, the state is going to be lifting a lot of restrictions, if not all of them, sometime in the middle of next month, June 15. So I would imagine that it would come in under that, but I don't have any specific knowledge about you know the pool and the pool protocol. I don't know, Jessica or David or even Jeff.
Well, the only knowledge I have is in the new statute SB 91. It specifically says that you can't withhold rent and you're not entitled to a rent deduction for the lack of use of any amenities that are caused by the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yep.
I mean, you could potentially call the San Francisco Department of Building Inspections and see if, you know, those sorts of amenities have to have some sort of sign-off from the city. I've done that before, called and pretended that I was, a landlord or whatever who would have to do that and ask the question. So, you could do that.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for your help.
Thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. One question we spoke of involves evictions. Only back rent because of COVID are not proceeding right now, or at least back rent is not proceeding because of COVID right now to eviction. And we talked about nuisance, and it looks like nuisance evictions are still going. Has anybody seen, whether on the landlord side or the tenant side, anybody seen anything suggesting that a landlord might use nuisance as a ruse to try to evict for back rent, trying to backdoor it?
Well, that's always happened to some extent, and courts are very aware of that. So, they look closely at nuisance. In San Francisco, under the rent ordinance, there's a very specific phrasing. It has to be, something that's ongoing and, is a lot of a problem, and it has to be all listed in the notice. A court eventually will want to see the evidence of it. They want to see the complaints from the other tenants or, the police reports or whatever.
Has your experience been similar, Sal?
I was going to say, it seems like it would be a tough thing to do, to disguise, seeking rent and disguising it as a nuisance. It just seems extremely difficult to do because of the requirements for a nuisance eviction. They're kind of tough, the nuisance evictions. So I don't see it, and I haven't had any situation where I thought anybody was doing that. I just haven't seen it.
You know, and the tenants in their answer to the unlawful detainer complaint for nuisance can, you know, raise defenses of retaliation or discrimination or some other affirmative defense that, if it doesn't entirely defeat an eviction, will at least bring the court's head up to look at, you know, the facts a little more closely. And if a court thinks that a landlord is really, you know, fudging it on the nuisance to try it because the real reason is the rent, they're aware of that, and they will notice it, because as part of pleading an unlawful detainer case, you have to plead that you're complying with all rules that apply, including the San Francisco rent ordinance. And the rent ordinance has a requirement that the dominant motive stated in the notice is the dominant motive. And if the tenant can prove that it's not, then the landlord loses.
Well, I had one case during this COVID pandemic that might be like a borderline case. And it was a woman tenant who lived alone and was a hoarder. And it got to the point of where she not only hoarded stuff in her unit, but she had so much stuff that she actually piled it on the stairway outside her unit. And we gave her a notice, a nuisance notice. And I think before we filed the action, she at least partially cleaned it up, or at least cleaned up the stairway, and we didn't proceed with it. So I think my landlord client had a legitimate reason, and it wasn't an ulterior motive.
You know, the mirror image to that question, the exact opposite question, we have a tenant with a history of harassing other tenants. Can they simply withhold rent and try to claim protection under the moratorium?
Well, I think they would get the protection under the moratorium for the COVID-related rent. I mean, oh, you think it's not COVID-related?
In other
financial
words,
distress?
If the landlord's trying to get the tenant out of there because they're harassing other tenants and proving to be a nuisance, could the tenant try to, as a ruse themselves, withhold rent and claim that it's all really trying to get them out for the non-payment of rent?
Well, but I think most attorneys would be like me. Before I would file that case, I would demand a declaration from the neighbor under penalty of perjury and some kind of understanding that they'll agree to testify. Otherwise, I wouldn't take the case.
That sounds like a good strategy. And I notice, Sal, you're nodding. Do you agree with that?
You know, I absolutely agree with that. And with respect to your question on could the tenant withhold the rent and then not pay it, you know, intending to claim it as a COVID-related non-payment, at some point, they're going to have to prove that. So the moratorium will protect them, whether it's COVID-related or not, in my opinion, at least in San Francisco, until October 1st. But come October 1st, when the lawsuit is filed, you know, they have defenses, affirmative defenses to non-payment of rent. But they're going to have to explain at that point they're going to have to show the impact. They're going to have to answer questions regarding their income during the pandemic. And so I think they're going to lose a lot of credibility, and they're certainly going to lose any protections that they might have had if it was a ruse and they really did have the money and they just didn't want to pay it. So anyway.
With that, let me turn it over to Mark from San Francisco. Mark, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yes. Hi. Thank you. I have two questions about the COVID rent moratorium. One is, I never quite understood, is will all the back rent be due after the moratorium is over? That's my first question.
The answer is yes, because none of the moratoriums or anything waive the obligation to pay rent. Okay, unless your landlord waives the rent, and that's the formal term, and says that you never have to pay it, then the state or any local ordinances that I'm aware of do not waive the rent for the landlord. So, yes, the money is owed, in San Francisco, there's a tiered system on, you know, what part that came due during various parts of COVID, you know, can be evicted for or just have to be, you know, filed for it as a breach of contract payment in small claims court. So, but the answer is that money, is, that rent money is not permanently waived. It is just put off.
Okay. Well, that answers my question, and my second question is now moot. So thank you very much.
I would like to hear your second question, nevertheless.
Well, okay. My second question was going to be, it was sort of dependent on the answer to the first question. My second question was, if rent has been paid during the moratorium period, can a person apply to get any of that rent back? But that was dependent on whether the rent was being waived.
So how about it? Is there any provision for somebody who is paying rent they'd be otherwise eligible for relief from the state, which they didn't apply for, or maybe they did? Is there any ability for them to be reimbursed?
I mean, this, my opinion is no, that would be a breach of a contract, and maybe I don't want to get too technical, but taking property without due process to force the landlord to give back rent that was actually owed and had been paid. I can't imagine that a court is going to do that.
I don't think so either, because the COVID relief, you know, rent relief programs are all designed for people who were unable to pay. All of them were set up and state in them that, you know, if you have the money and can pay, you should.
I agree with both David and Jessica on that point. And I understand why you said the question was moot now, because, you know, Jessica had answered it pretty good, the first question. So I get it. I was curious too, though, Jeff. I wanted to know what it was as well.
Absolutely. And it could always been that with a different twist on it, but I tend to think that you're right. It was mooted by that, and I could have and should have taken you at your word, Mark. But thank you for joining us in your legal rights.
Thank you.
You know, one of the questions that I've been propounded doesn't seem like something that started with the pandemic and the moratorium that followed. It's a long-term traditional question that landlords ask, which I think is exacerbated by our current state of affairs. But I get the question, if my tenants slide on the rent, how do I meet my obligations? And obviously, when there's a longer period they could slide by because of the moratorium, it makes the problem worse. But what relief is there for landlords if you have a tenant that's not cooperating with the application process? So theoretically, there's no relief coming from the state or anywhere else. What can the landlord do?
Well, I've advised my landlords in that situation. Most of my landlords in that situation are commercial landlords where they have a restaurant or a retail business that is sort of either going belly up or is not paying the rent or is paying half rent or whatever. And I've advised them all to seek deferments from their mortgages, and almost all of them have gotten it. And I believe there's a statute, I don't know that I could cite the statute number or the name, that requires at least federally insured banks to give to consider a mortgage deferment in such cases. And I think most banks do that. That's been my experience.
Have Jessica or Sal, have either one of you similarly had the same issue come up?
I have not. My landlord clients that have not been receiving rent have been receiving enough rent to keep the buildings afloat. None of them were, you know, it was their, you know, their profit perhaps that they were losing, but not the amount of money required to maintain the building.
Commercial tenants where they had a restaurant that closed or a bar that closed.
I usually refer landlords to the California Apartment Association website because they have some very good resources about what sort of relief is available for homeowners or for commercial owners.
David was. I didn't hear what David had said just before Jessica's response. I just missed it, but perhaps Jessica addressed it.
I believe that there is a statute that requires at least federally insured mortgages and banks to consider workout programs and deferments for landlords who are affected, and I think most of them do. I'm not sure about, if it's a private mortgage that's not insured by the Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac or whatever.
You know, another source of these protections could be state or federal law, even if it's not an insured loan. There's still the question about where this lender is chartered and whether there's additional protections under the state or federal entity that charters them.
Mm-hmm.
So it would behoove a landlord to contact one of you or perhaps the lawyer referral service in their county to follow up on that. We're down to about 2.5 minutes. Would any of you like a moment or two for any closing thoughts?
I would just say that with this COVID pandemic, the pendulum has seemed to me to have swung to the furthest extreme against the landlord. When I first came to the state in 1971, a long time ago, it was the other way around. It was no doctrine of habitability. Didn't matter if you didn't have a toilet or a shower, if water was coming through the roof, and you still had to pay the rent where you were evicted, and the landlord could even go in ex parte before a trial or anything and get a writ of immediate possession. All of that now has swung to the other way, and hopefully it will come back more in the middle. I'm hoping.
I've learned politically not to expect that pendulum in any arena to ever reach the middle. It seems to jump past the middle to go to the extremes. It does it politically. It does it in just about every arena. Sal, do you have any closing thoughts you want to throw out?
It's sort of in line with what David said. You know, with the prices of property being what they are, very high for renters, for buyers, properties become, just extremely expensive. So the fights have become extremely difficult and expensive as well. If a landlord or a tenant is going to engage, they got to be ready for, an expense of time and money. Even if the tenant is getting free legal resources, and they're probably good legal resources, they're still going to be risking their tenancy, and they're going to be spending a lot of time and, risking a bad result. So in addition to the tenancy, they can get a judgment against them, and then that's going to follow them around. And so I've lived in San Francisco my whole life, and I've been around where the rent ordinance wasn't even mentioned. You know, it wasn't even followed for the first 5 years, at least, maybe 10. Nobody even knew about it, and then landlords kept taking advantage. And so that's why we have what we have. I'll stop there.
Jessica, you want to take about 15 or 20 seconds?
Well, just building on what Sal said, the San Francisco rent board at least seems to respond to when people take advantage. All of their most recent enactments have come from positions of where there's been abuse in the system by landlords or tenants.
I think the ultimate relief is going to come when inflation forces interest rates up. We all get a breather. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 in San Francisco. We've been discussing landlord-tenant law. Our guests tonight have been David Finkelstein of San Mateo and Sal Timpano and Jessica Chalik of San Francisco. Our show tonight has been produced by yours truly. Once again, thank you to Jessica, Sal, and David, my guests. And especially our thanks to all of you for joining us. I'm Jeff Hayden. Good night and stay safe.